Welcome back to Campbell Conversations with your host Colin Campbell, and today is episode 210 of the podcast, and it is a return of my roundtable discussions with Chris Burns, the founder of Savage Scholar, and David Hatt, the founder of MTN. This time round, we get together and we are standing on the shoulders of giants. What do I mean by that? In 2023, there are big pros and cons to the world and the access of technology. One of the biggest pros has got to be the access that we have to information and the knowledge and advice from the greatest minds of both previous generations and the current era that we operate in today. So David, Chris and I got together and we picked four ideas each from four different creators that we've learned from and shared them with each other to discuss how we've actioned those ideas and benefited from the information that we've been lucky to have access. And together we pulled together 12 frameworks and ideas that you can implement for a better life immediately, which I find quite exciting. I'm recording this introduction on my birthday, the 10th of October, before releasing this on the 11th, which is on the Wednesday morning. Last year, for my 30th birthday, I released the podcast as a solo episode as 30 Thoughts at the age of 30. If you would like me to do something similar for my 31st birthday, whether that's 31 ideas or maybe we flip it around and we do 13, then please do DM me on Instagram, which is at col.cambro, or you can get in touch with me on LinkedIn at Colin T. Campbell. Today's podcast is sponsored and supported by the Factory Weights Business Hub event. If you work in the fitness industry as a coach, a PT, a gym owner, or have a fitness business in Scotland, then this event is the one for you. The PT coach Phil Lerney is coming to Glasgow. He is one of the OGs of the fitness industry, and Phil is an expert at helping coaches and fitness professionals help more clients, reach more people, increase their profits, and scale their business. Now, if that's not enough for you that Phil is coming to Glasgow, I will be attending this event as well, and I'll be hosting a roundtable discussion with a varied panel, including today's guest, Chris Burns. He will be there alongside Stella Bartram, who is a CrossFit gym owner and an MC, Maya Halliday, who's the owner of Sorella, which is a female fitness club, and Tom Russell, who's the co-founder of Factory Weights. You can count on me in that discussion to ask the important questions and help you gain the insights you need to learn how to progress your business in the fitness industry. The link will be in the show notes to Eventbrite for you to purchase your ticket ahead of the event on Saturday, the 5th of November, and it'll be hosted in Glasgow. Before we hit play and start this episode, I want to say a massive thank you for the continued support. The solo episode, as usual, on episode 209 has gone absolutely crazy. We've had a lot more new subscribers come across and a lot more new ratings, which is massively appreciated. If you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do hover that finger and hit that 5-star button. And if you are new here or you're a long-time listener and you just haven't managed to yet, please do hit that subscribe button. I promise it helps me to get some more incredible guests and keep having brilliant conversations. The music's going to play and you've got almost an hour and a half with myself, Mr. Chris Burns, and Mr. David Hatt. Gents, we're back together and we're doing a slightly different style of episode yet again. And we've got the chance to pick some of our favourite creators and different ideas that we've learned from over the years that we've actioned. And then, of course, as is tradition, we'll go around the table and we'll kind of probe and push back against each other and see what real value we can get from it. And given how well-read you two are, in particular you, Chris, I'm excited to see some of these and then obviously bring some of them forward as well, because I really believe that a lot of the time when I explain something I've learned, it reinforces the lesson for me. Yeah. And I think as we were gathering these in preparation for this, it must've been quite fun to look back in your archive and be like, oh, I'll maybe want to talk about this lesson in particular.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let's kick off with you, Mr. Burns. Freshly married, back from your honeymoon.
Thank you, yep.
And ready to rumble, congratulations. Let's go.
Okay, so the first one is from a guy called Rollo May. He's not very, I wouldn't say he's particularly well known in wider circles, but he's contemporary as Viktor Frankl, obviously from Man's Search for Meaning. So he's a psychologist and a kind of well-known kind of, not a thought leader, if you like. And he's got a book called The Courage to Create, but his best known work is Love and Will, I think. But this one's from The Courage to Create. So if any creators are listening, we're all creators these days, aren't we? We're all posting content and all the rest of it. So this one is from the early chapter in the book, and it says, commitment is healthiest when it is not without doubt, but in spite of doubt. To believe fully and at the same moment to have doubts is not a contradiction.
And what does that mean to you, Chris, then? When you've read that in the past and you've thought, right, this is important to me, what's it meant?
I think it's about embracing the unknowns of something that you're going after, be it in life or business. Like, your commitment to something doesn't have to require you to be completely devoid of any challenges, which sounds obvious when you say it loud, but oftentimes when it comes to commitment, or if you're certainly my experience when I've looked back on a time where I've maybe been hesitant to pull the trigger on a decision or fully commit to something, it's because I've been like, what if this happens? Oh, but what about that? All these things outside of my control. But if you just embrace that as part of the package, it's like, mm-hmm. well, that's what's going to be there anyway. So it's not going to stop me from giving the same level of commitment. If anything, it's going to make me commit even harder, you know, and inevitably get the outcome that I want, because I know that there's going to be these challenges to overcome. Yeah. So that's what it means.
So that's sort of like starting something without having all the answers.
Yes.
But knowing that you're going to have to struggles along the way to kind of get
there. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think like, I was going to give a bit, I'll give a sporting example actually. So like, I play rugby. So if I go into a game and I don't commit 100% to the game and physically, mentally and everything, I'm going to lose, no doubt about it. Now, if I could commit 100% and still lose, I've done that plenty of times. But, you know, I've never won a game where I've been like totally half-arsed or been worried about like, oh, what if this doesn't come off? What if that doesn't come off? Or if I have won those games, I have not contributed to that win. It's been other people that have carried
the team.
It's
a team game, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So like, sorry, David, for leaving you out of a sport analogy there.
It's okay. Yeah, I like basketball. And so, UFC. MMA.
Saw the Michael Jordan documentary went all in on basketball.
By the way, the Redeem Team, did you watch that?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Not
also
yet,
good. Sorry, tangent
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what it means to me.
I'm thinking immediately of an example that you two have definitely discussed before in the podcast, but maybe for the kind of horde of new subscribers that have come across it, maybe haven't gone back and listened to that. I remember one of the first things that you guys launched together would have been the Positivity Project during lockdown one.
The most cringe name ever.
Yes.
But I remember you guys pulled that together and there was elements of it you were really happy with and elements you knew that would be refined as it went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's an example of sometimes just launching and not necessarily building the wings on the way down, but definitely making improvements and iterations. And look at some of the other things you've gone on to build, like the Fat Loss Project, which is in a constant state of upgrade and improvement. And you're completely committed to that process, but you know that there's elements that are going to challenge you and maybe push back along the way, particularly as your numbers grow as well. Like I've noticed that with the podcast, sometimes you get feedback on like the intro music or like the cuts between things. And I'm like, oh wow, I'd never even thought of that. But that's the law of large numbers.
Yeah,
but more people are there, so you're more likely to get somebody that doesn't object, but maybe says, oh, that could be better. And I'm completely open to that.
Yeah.
But you only get that through just growing and growing and growing, getting exposure to more stuff.
Yeah. I think that's to do with like any sort of self-improvement. I think one thing that, again, we spoke about in the past was like, you'll never be done. I think whatever you start, I think some people view that as quite demotivating, like you'll never be finished with fitness or business or finances. But I think actually, I've discussed this before, but I think it's quite positive knowing that like there's never an end point. You can always have that level of self-improvement. There's always going to be challenges to overcome. There's always going to be problems to solve, which is actually something that I've got written down here as well. But yeah, I think that's quite a powerful thing, knowing that there's always going to be challenges to overcome to an extent as well.
And this particular lesson or concept, Chris, when did you come across it in your journey?
So one example would be when I made my first hire within my agency and I wrote down everything that could possibly go wrong. Because I had literally read this and then I wrote down everything that could go wrong with this first hire. And I said, am I still going to commit to this fully? And that was it. And I did. And you're still working with us. You've been a fantastic first hire. Contributed loads to the business. And it's been huge for us having him on board. But I think that was the first time I put this into action. And it was just listing out things like, you know, from the most simple ones, like, you know, we waste a bunch of money on hiring somebody. He steals a client, even down to the ones that are really quite like, okay, well, that would really have a proper effect on us. And in terms of like the commitment to that, it was a commitment to the decision, but also a commitment to make sure I'd done everything I possibly could to make sure he was successful.
And those things don't happen as well. Eh?
Yeah, exactly. So it also makes you think. So I think like that might be a useful exercise for people if they're thinking of taking action on this on this quote. Is like, well, if you have doubts and those and within the, under the heading of doubt, you could have challenges and everything. List them all out and then just be like, what if or. Ask the what if question or the so what question to each one, and you'll probably feel a lot better about it, I would say. And you'll maybe have like at least a half baked solution, and you'll probably realize once they're out of your head and they're on paper, they're not actually anything to stop you from committing fully, you know?
I think that's one of the most useful things I've done in business and life, but like listing out what's the possible positives, what's the possible negatives, and then looking at like what's the most realistic outcome of each, and providing that the positives are more going to be more realistic to be the positives are more going to be more, more realistic likely, to happen. I think that allows me to make probably better decisions.
Yes, so many of the people that I've spoken to over the last 3 years and been acquainted with yourselves for far longer than that, it's interesting how doing these exercises when you're in the middle of rushing from decision to decision, taking the time to pause, gather the data, make the call, because there's people that listen to this that are extremely impulsive, there's people that listen to this that are optimizers, so they'll always go through these little things but then never take the action off the back of it. And I think you guys are striking that nice middle ground, and this particular concept allows you to pause, gather what you need, and then right, it's time to fully commit and go.
It just on that, I'm impulsive, so if you are impulsive and you're listening to this, I've got a very impulsive streak in me, and I feel like this is a good way of slowing down and processing your decisions before you just, you know, pull the trigger on something that you probably shouldn't.
Go.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the first concept out of the way. David, let's bring your first one to the table.
Again, I've probably mentioned this on this podcast, or to be honest, it's something that I speak about a lot because it's the most powerful book and kind of thought process that I've ever came across or utilized. And the quote is, our self-image and our habits tend to go together. Change one and you will automatically change the other. And that's from a book called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. And to be honest, I've seen so many benefits in my own life for this, but also with clients. And I actually spoke about this quite recently on my own podcast, of the power of your internal dialogue and what you're constantly feeding yourself has the most net positive on every aspect of your life I have seen. Now, you will get some people that are like, you know, you can't just shout in the mirror and see these positive affirmations and those things they'll come about and they'll happen. But for me, like reading that book and understanding that, like feeding yourself the right information and feeding yourself a much better internal dialogue does have like such positive benefits in every single area of your life. With clients, one of the most positive and useful things I've ever found is actually just telling people like, oh, like I think you can actually achieve this goal. So most people sign up and they give us their goal. You know, they want to lose 3 stone, they want to lose this, they want gain bigger muscles, whatever it is. They tell us these goals, but they've never really thought about truly achieving them. They've never really thought about what happens when they become that person. And I think saying to people like, and don't get me wrong, it's not like I'm just saying this to bullshit them. Like I'm saying it because I'm like, well, if you follow these steps, you can become that person. You can do this. Some people have never had that. I'm quite lucky. I have had pretty positive influences growing up. Good coaches when I used to do sport. Parents were pretty good. I had solid client base actually that were like positive influences, so I was always fed pretty good information from probably 20 onwards, like in fact younger actually, 14 probably onwards. So I always had that level of like people feeding me positive stuff. Some people don't have that, and I think me being able to give that to people is quite powerful, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. And when I'm thinking about what you're talking about there, you were naming some of the sources around you that were positive in real life, and that's vital. But one of the whole reasons that I wanted to do this particular type of podcast was that we do stand on the shoulders of giants, and that we actually have access to so much more information than before. So that particular book was a milestone moment for you, reading that in terms of rewiring or at least reinforcing the positive traits inside of your head. In the same way, we can tap into a podcast like this one, some of the creators that you've got on Instagram that are really positive, some of the books that we're going to talk about throughout this as well. So it's quite an exciting time if you haven't maybe got the karate coach, the client base that you maybe get access to. I know you've learned a lot from a business perspective, some of your really successful business clients who you've helped with their body. If somebody's not getting access to that, there is still the opportunity to get access to positive role models and positive thoughts and reinforcement of you can do this, let's push forward together.
I think nowadays you've got a better opportunity than ever to have that. Like there's so many people that have never had that. Like so many people have had a much worse upbringing the mine and zero positive influences. But it's a hard one though, because you can say that, but they're probably never been told to even find the positive influences, because they've got no one around them to say these things. But some like podcasts like this and, you know, all of the other stuff that we consume, I think that can be such a good start point for people.
I think as a reformed self-talk critic, because I used to be very resistant to that idea. I was like, it's all hippy dippy, woo-woo nonsense. I was very bad for that. Especially when I kind of first started out in business, I just wanted hard facts, strategies, that kind of thing. But I think through the habit of journaling and For context, my journaling has no prompts. I open up a blank journal and I pour my thoughts onto the page, whatever it happens to be that morning. But I think whenever I've went through a slump in terms of even just like energy, outlook, not really thinking that I'm showing up every day for myself, my wife, my business, whatever it is, when I look, I don't know if people do this, but I always recommended it. You should read your old journal entries. That is what they're there for. It's not just to write in, it's also to read. And I can go back and I can literally look at my self-talk just taking a dip.
Yeah.
Every time I've went through a slump, it's the one trend I see all the time when I start thinking about myself differently, when I start, you know, having a more of a negative outlook, is all about the stories I'm telling myself every time without fail. So now I'm very, very, and it's honestly taken me, I would say maybe between 3 and 5 slumps to actually really register that lesson and be like, you have to be so, so mindful of how you're talking to yourself and catching it, you know, because you can literally see it in black and white. The things I'm saying, it's actually scary, but then it's also very empowering as well, because you have complete control over that, don't you? How you talk to yourself. So yeah.
You do have so much control over it. And again, a theme across so many different inspiring individuals that I've spoken to is that they're the hero in their own story a lot of the time. And they're just not bigging themselves up to a egotistical, delusional extent, but they are just confident in that this is going to be all right for me. Like, this is going to go well for me because I'm going to prove it. And Hormozy's got this kind of famous quote on this, doesn't he, where he's talking about you don't become who you are through screaming affirmations in the mirror, but by positively reinforcing that over and over again. But the two are linked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you keep telling yourself this positive story, and then we can talk about James Clear at some point, I'm bound to, he talks about your identity lining up with the habits that you do. And if that then lines up with your self-talk, you kind of become quite a powerful individual. And even on those slumps that you have, Chris, you're probably still performing at a level that's beyond what you were doing previously, but
your floor always rises for sure,
which is an exciting thing as well, your habits and your routines and things that you've built in within that, they'll be on a lower level during the slump. They won't disappear entirely, but you know that to be at your optimum best, you have to be telling yourself the positive story about who Chris is, who he is as a business owner, as a husband, etc.
But I think even like culturally, that is something that people really struggle with in this part of the world for sure.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of resistance to that, because, you know, it's all this kind of toxic humility about like you, even you just saying that there about you've got to talk about who Chris is. A little, my like caveman West of Scotland brain went, oh, and totally, you know,
third person, don't do
recoiled
that.
Recoiled at that, you know, like, don't do that. But it's like, but you're absolutely right. But I think like, what you were saying about maybe people overcoming not having positive influences, sometimes it's actually overcoming that kind of narrative you hear throughout your whole life, growing up in this neck of the woods, you know. But I would say just the UK as a whole, maybe even wider Europe, you know, because
the UK is more cynical, isn't it?
We always slag off Americans, don't we? I've been guilty of it in the past, of how like positive they are and all the rest of it. But it's like, well, they're obviously onto something, you know.
I think even in the self-development space, which we are kind of half involved in, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like we spoke a minute ago about what you surround yourself with, what you listen to and things like that. But I think what people don't think about much is like the actual voice inside their head that they listen to. So maybe they are binge listening to all of this self-development and they're reading every book they can find. But you do need to take some time to actually sit and reflect on these things. And whether it's journaling, or for me, it's like going a walk in silence, like zero music, zero podcast, and actually thinking about like who I think I am and what I actually want as well. And internalizing like who I want to be and what I want to achieve. That's been massive for me. And achieving like anything that I have across the last kind of 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, I could genuinely have done all these lessons from my recent interview with Dr. Julie Garner, who Chris recommended to me. And she talked about a concept called building in the gaps.
Julie DM'd me, by the way, we're friends now.
Oh, nice.
Oh, brilliant.
Total fanboy. She coaches you for free.
Total fanboy moment. Total fanboy moment. Sorry, Colin.
That's so good. Well, thank you for bringing it to my attention for starters. And then I'm glad the podcast is big enough for her to be interested to come on. One of the things she was talking about was building in the gaps, and she uses that concept where the guys that she's coaching in hedge funds or whatever else in the US, they're back-to-back meetings, so they never have time to pause and actually ruminate on what they've been talking about. And that's exactly what you were talking about there. You can binge listen to all these podcasts, you can read all these books, but if you never take a moment to pause and reflect on what it means to you, then you kind of just run from the next one to the next. And that's cool, like, fantastic, please download everything in the backlog and listen to it. I'll be delighted to see that. But if you listen to an episode and you're you're trying to digest it, take the time to digest it, go a walk in silence, go in the shower, go early to your bed and yeah. have a pen and paper, and you'll probably find that you get more from an episode than if you just charge on to another one.
I think even if you look at like scientific literature towards like the science of learning and remembering, it is intense bouts of like learning, 45 to 90 minutes, followed by 15 to 30 minutes rest, rinse and repeat. So I think that makes complete sense. Yes, on learning like knowledge like that, but also learning on, I suppose, levels of like self-development as well.
Mm. Yeah, building the gaps. I think that's a great thing to do. So we're on to my first one. So Jordan Peterson Clarkson, off the back of being mentioned on the
take a shot.
Podcast.
Everybody take a shot. Colin's mentioned Jordan Peterson.
So I've picked rule two from the first 12 Rules for Life book, so An Antidote to Chaos. And rule two is treat yourself like someone you're responsible for helping. And there's two strands to this. Some of it links to what David's just talked about there in terms of self-talk. But what he explained is that we are so much more compassionate for someone that's responsible for helping, whether that's a family member or a pet, than ourselves. That could be our self-talk. It can be how we help our friends deal with their problems. It can even be like how diligent we are if, say, your son or daughter got prescribed a course of antibiotics, or your dog was one of the examples he gave in the book. Mm-hmm. You would make sure they completed that course. Whereas for ourselves, I think the completion rate for like an adult for their yeah. like medical diagnosis or prescription is like 66%, and that's like an average. So loads of people are doing way less than that. So it was really, really interesting. But on the counter side of that is, yes, we're going to be more compassionate to ourselves, but also if your friend was like performing self-destructive, like almost idiotic behaviors, you would probably have a really firm word or intervention. So not only does he push back against you belittling yourself and battering yourself and not treating yourself with compassion, but he's also pushing back on you like embracing victimhood, because you would probably have a word with your friend and give them a shake.
Yeah.
So I love that treating yourself like someone you're responsible for helping isn't just an arm around the shoulder and supporting them. It's also a little bit of a shake and a kick up the arse if it's needed.
Yeah. I view that from a business perspective, because the amount of times I've caught myself speaking to someone in my team or someone's asked me advice and then I give them the advice and I kind of pause and I look, fuck, I'm not doing that either. Like, I need to be doing those things. Like, maybe someone's asked me about how to get more leads. What would I do? And I'm like, you know, you need to do this, and this. And I lay out like 5-6 steps and I look and I go, it's exactly what I need to do as well. And it's so funny. Like, that's such a relevant rule for that. It reminds me of that.
Yeah, I remember reading a book called Conscious Coaching by Brett Bartholomew, which is, he's a very well-known strength conditioning coach. He's worked in the NFL and stuff like that. And he's got his own platform doing his own thing now. And he spoke about a lot in that book about, it's all about how to communicate with different personalities, because he's working with guys with huge egos and they're multi-millionaires, and you know, he's trying to get them to do a power clean. They're like, I'm not doing that. And, you know, there's all these different dynamics going on. And I think the biggest lesson I took away from that book was something what you're saying there, Colin, like how you pick and choose how you speak to yourself. So again, that's about knowing and understanding yourself, because there's certain areas of my life where I would say I am more compassionate with myself when I'm giving myself a bit of a kind of review or whatever with business. I am not compassionate with myself at all in my relationships, because I do not respond to compassion. If I am not showing up as the best partner I can be, or friend or whatever, I do not respond to, it's going to be okay, you know, you can do this. I'm like, get a fucking grip of yourself. This is not good enough. You are letting people down. And that really triggers me. Even though I know I'm saying it to myself, I know what's coming, it still gets me going. Whereas in business, I find if I'm a bit more kind of take the softer approach, arm around the shoulder, that helps me get back to where I need to be. Obviously, that comes with a lot of self-experimentation, doesn't it? But I would encourage people, if you're not doing that, to do that, to figure out what you're going to respond to in certain situations, because it's never, ever going to be the same thing, you know?
I found it super useful for business problems for me to write them down and then look at them and almost have them as if someone else is asking me them, and to give myself that advice. That's been useful. In the last probably year, I've done that a little bit more. And it's funny, because you know what you should be doing, but sometimes you need to ask, you quite literally need to write down and ask yourself. Who was I watching recently? And they videoed themselves doing this. Like, they would video themselves and then send it across to themselves and then answer it as if it was like the wiser, older version of them. I can't remember who it was. It was quite interesting. Like, wait, I've not done that yet. I've not came to got to that stage yet, but writing it down certainly does help.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, given the position that all three of us are in certain industries, people will ask advice. And like you say, David, sometimes if you go back to them with advice, you're thinking, wow, if I did these things as well, it would totally. Probably put me in the position. Like for you, David, it's probably content.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Because
a lot of the time coaches are asking you, how have you grown the business, the size of MTN? Yeah. What systems do you have in place? How do you generate your leads, et cetera, et cetera? How do you get such good testimonials and referrals? And you're thinking, well, you know exactly how you've got there, but sometimes it's like, right, I probably need to double down on this and this again 100%. And go through another 100%. Phase of it. In the same way, Chris, a lot of people will ask you about how you win your first client or how did you service this client in a particular way? Like what content did you send them as your value add rather than just your ask when you were trying to win them? And you're probably being like, oh, remember I used to do a lot more absolutely. Of that to grow the business to where I got to.
Hypocritical. I don't know if you do sometimes.
Oh, totally.
You're giving people that advice. I'm like, yeah, you need to post, you know, three times a day. You need to do this, this, and this. And I'm like, I'm doing none of that.
Yeah.
But that can be sometimes be a sharp reminder. And that's why the rule is so good. And one of the things he says within the chapter is, when you're recommending something either to yourself or to somebody, it's not often what you want, but it's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's not what might make you happy. So he was talking about, and I'll extrapolate this out. He was talking about self-care, for example. A lot of people's definition of self-care is like, maybe binge drinking a bottle of wine and binge eating a
facial.
That's a private joke that we'll have to expand on another time. But maybe a bottle of wine, a tub of ice cream, drunk text your ex, scroll on Tinder, buy recreational drugs, whatever it is people deem as like self-care or like they're out. That's not what they would recommend to their friend if they were in that situation. They would probably recommend something a bit more wholesome, a bit more positive. Mm. And I think that's something that rule really speaks to me on, like when you're thinking about all these different variations of the armor in the shoulder or the bit up the backside.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, Chris, let's move on to your number two then.
Okay, so this is from Nassim Taleb in his book, Anti-Fragile, which is a really easy read.
I failed it twice. You know,
not confusing at all. It's in the early chapter, and I've just feels I'm maybe about three quarters of the way through the book, and I was reading this on my honeymoon, and this is a line I highlighted. It was about post-traumatic growth, and it was a concept that Nassim Taleb was introduced to by he's talking about this in a financial context. So he was introduced to this by, I think it was actually a British politician of all people, and he was talking about how when Black Swan events come along, so a Black Swan event would be like the 2008 financial crisis or that other one that I won't mention that happened in 2019, and that comes along, we focus on the things that are negatively affected by those things, but there's things that grow out of these really negative, so what are seen as negative events.
Yeah.
So the concept of like post-traumatic growth, and I find myself tying it into things like, you know, people always say like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger or whatever, or I'll come back better. But like, I felt like it was a more kind of succinct way of putting that. It's like when you've went through a really challenging time, it's not necessarily going to be the end of you, or it's not going to be the beginning of a spiral into bad habits or, you know, a long kind of slump in your personal life, work life, whatever. You can actually grow out of that. I think a lot of that ties into what we've just spoken about, what your self-talk is during that time, but you do really have like a lot of opportunities to grow out of off the back of a traumatic event in your life. And I know that might sound a bit harsh. I understand if you've experienced a big loss or whatever, then that's not really on your mind. I get that. And I'm not saying there's no place for, you know, mourning or taking time to, you know, come to terms with whatever's happened. And I'm not, it could be losing something, it could be losing a job, it could be whatever it is, losing a big client. You know, you can go and you can have a mope and you can be sad about it, but I think it's recognizing there are huge opportunities for growth on the other side of that as well.
Can you take an example in your life, David?
I would say every level of failure is going to teach you something to an extent. You're going to have a lesson in everything, as cliche as that sounds, but
don't get a facial.
Don't get a facial before a podcast. Fail. A specific example off the top of my head right now, no, but like numerous failures in my life have always led to, I suppose it's like a level of self-reflection. You're going to learn from everything. And I think the hardest people maybe listening to this right now that are going through a shit time, whether it's a death, whether it's whatever it is, you're never going to think about that in the moment. Like, oh, what am I going to learn from this? Like, you know, my dad just died. Like, how's this going to teach me anything?
Mm-hmm.
But in a year, 3 year, 5 year, like, I think maybe this level of strength that you get from that, I don't want to say failure, that's not a failure, but like traumatic experience, I mean, to be fair, I've had very little like trauma in my life. I've had two instances that I can think of that were like hard, like really, really fucking hard. And there was some lessons in there. But if you were to bring it back to a really like basic level of like failing in the gym teaches you quite a lot. Like that's obviously fucking basic. Absolutely.
But to use the gym as well, how many memes do you see that breakups make bodybuilders?
Yeah.
And how many people go from being like an out of shape mess, they've got comfortable in a relationship, and mm-hmm. then she or he has decided I'm out of this.
Yeah.
And then they go on a fitness journey and they go on a kick, and it sorts out not just their physical body, but their mental outlook, their career, their business, whatever it is, because yeah. they've suddenly decided that I'm going to take control of this one aspect of my life. And we all know that fitness is the gateway drug to so many other
yeah. I think relationships and trauma from relationships are one of the biggest drivers for so many people, to be honest. I think it can be a massive motivator going through a shit time in that regard. And like you said, from a physique and aesthetic standpoint, yes, but I think like the mental gains you can get from that as well can be massive.
Like, it sounds really harsh, but sometimes you see a breakup and you see who's won out of it, mm-hmm. because even if they weren't the person that did the dumping or the breaking up,
yeah.
they sometimes come out of it and they really sort themselves out and they get themselves in a much stronger position, whereas you do see somebody that maybe wallows in the trauma of it and doesn't.
Yeah.
Move on to the next thing, because I mean, it's extremely hard to do, but the number of people you see come out of these things and be in a better position afterwards yeah. is huge.
For me, I think it's about to take advantage of like post-traumatic growth. It's directing your energy towards something worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So, because I always think you do have a lot of pent up energy during those times if you've went through, and I know like traumatic, that's just a quote from the book. We're just talking about, I guess you said, challenging times, yeah. setbacks. So like you do have pent up energy, and you could be like, I've had pent up energy where I've had like, I remember texting you about this, I had a challenging time with a client a few years ago, and I just redirected that energy towards getting other clients and having better approach, because you pointed out a few things in my onboarding process that I was missing that mm-hmm. you use with your clients, and I was like, right, I'm going to put, so again, that's a very simple example, but you can see how I could easily have wallowed in that because I believe that I was right. I still believe that, by the way. But you know what? I was getting myself really worked up because that's one thing that really, I was very worried about this person speaking bad about me to yeah. other clients. They were connected with other people I knew. There was like status at play. There was a lot of moving parts to this. And I was getting myself so, so, so wound up about this. And I could easily have just stayed in that state. But I just, for whatever reason, directed my energy towards, let's get another client. Let's handle this as best we can. And let's kind of learn from it. And I have grown out of that situation because I've got one thing I learned. Be more selective with your clients. Have a more airtight onboarding process about setting expectations and things like that. Yeah. And client communications, get better at that. You know, get better at checking in with them and making sure that the things are out with your control but affect the work you do mm-hmm. are, you know, at least checked in on. So yeah. that's a kind of more concrete example.
You use that pain to improve in other areas, which yeah. I think is fantastic. And like, if I think of a sales example in work when I've maybe lost a tender or lost yeah. a client, or I know I need to go and find something else to replace that revenue or to improve on that revenue. So I best use the energy of the rejection or the pain or the yeah. trouble to go and find and do something different. So yeah, I completely agree. You just plug in what you were putting into that into something else yeah. with a little extra boost because you're kind of hurt or you're angry.
Yeah. I actually think that's probably the biggest differentiate between people that achieve a level of success in anything and people that don't. I think they view setbacks and they view failure and they view trauma, or not even view, they use it as a motivator and they use it as something to drive them forward. Whereas if you speak to people that maybe aren't involved in any sort of, they've never, you know, been involved in any sort of self-development, anything like that, they really struggle to ever see the light at the end of the tunnel and ever learn from those lessons. And that's why they keep making those mistakes. So I think for me, like if I view the most successful people in my life, almost all of them have had some shit time at some point in business and in life. And I think those people have just used that in a very positive way. Not maybe straight away, but maybe it's 10 years later. But they've been able to like relate back to that and be like, do you know what? I've learned from that and I'm going to push forward because of that almost.
I also think by like being aware of this, you know, when even like the slightest stumble comes up, right, I'm going to use this as much as possible. And mm-hmm. if I think back to 2019, I moved job. And I was very well thought of in the previous job. And I was at a company for 12 weeks. An American hedge fund bought the company, made everyone redundant. And I remember being like unbelievably calm compared to all my other colleagues because I'd heard different stories from all these different podcasts and people I was listening to about how, oh, that's not a problem. And I was really confident in my skill set to be valuable yeah. to another business. And I remember I booked a photo shoot. So I had something to prep towards. I rewrote my CV the same night that we had a board meeting where everyone was getting told they were getting made redundant in like 6 or 12 weeks time, whatever it was, through the consultation process. And I remember so many people like crying, going to the pub and drinking, and people that didn't smoke, smoking like 10 fags, and me just being like, oh, I'm just going to redo my CV, go to the gym and phone the recruiter who placed me at this place.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that level of stress is high depending on how you decide to take it. Mm-hmm. And then I just used all the energy of like that kind of shaking of my foundations to go and do something positive. Yeah. I ended up at a better company. I went and did a photo shoot. I had a focus and something to work towards.
I don't think you probably realize how difficult that is for like the average person. That is not where they would go straight away. Like you said there, most people were like fretting and panicking. Mm. I think that's quite an impressive skill to have. And I think it's a skill. I think you can develop that.
It's 100% something you can build. Like resilience is, obviously people are born with different levels of it and your upbringing positions it. But things that I was exposed to, things that I chose to read, habits that I built, like training, like nutrition, yeah, like going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time. I was just more resilient to be able to stand up to a challenge.
See, that's interesting you say the resilience there, because in the book, now, if anybody out there fully understands what Nassim Taleb is saying, please take this with a pinch of salt, because this is a simpleton's breakdown of it. But he talks about being anti-fragile is gaining from some sort of disorder. So we could say that this concept is an anti-fragile concept. So when something comes along in your life that would normally, say, wreck somebody else or send them way off course, you actually come out better for it. But the step before being anti-fragile is being robust. Mm-hmm. Robust and resilience are interchangeable. Yeah. So it's about being robust. So you are initially robust to that bad news. You didn't waver. You were just like, this is what it is, and you probably processed it. And then the anti-fragile part was you redirecting that energy and straight away into something, and then you've came out the other side gaining from it. So there's like steps to it, you know. It's not as if like you get bad news or, you know, you go through a challenge and you're like, exactly. You're all smiling happy about it, because that's nonsense.
Yeah, sociopathic.
Exactly. That's not what this concept's about. But like you say, the step before that, be robust, absorb the news, handle the situation and process it, and then find a way to come out of it better off than when you went in.
Yeah, exactly that. David, number two for you.
This one can actually relate to both business and we're talking about relationships a minute ago, and it's Alex Hormozi. You obviously knew I was going to have an Alex Hormozi quote and
drink a shot.
There was too many to pick from, but this one's probably more relevant just really recently. And I'll read it out. You can spend time building something great, then let the customers market it for you for the rest of your life, or you can spend no time building it and spend the rest of your life trying to get customers to buy it. And like I said, how does that relate to relationships? I think a lot of people chase being in a relationship and chase a certain type of relationship rather than chasing becoming a better person so that people want to be with them in a relationship. So that's how I'm relating it to like a relationship standpoint. From a product standpoint, this is a fairly recent quote that I think he's made, but it kind of relates back to the last 10 years of running a fitness business. And without really knowing it, customer service has always been like the forefront. Even the word customer service I didn't use until the last 3-4 years, but having like a really strong relationship with clients, having a good way with people and delivering like a top class service was always something that I did. And people always ask me like, how did you get clients so fast? How have you kept those clients? Like, I built my fitness business super quick. I managed to get leads much better than most people with much bigger followings, things like that. And I relate it to actually just having a really good service, having a product and a service that's so good that does a lot of the talking for me. And yeah, like people have always asked, like, how did you get 356 people, to sign up to like a very, like that specific program last year? And do you know what? Of course, there's amazing marketing involved, 100%, but the product better. the product's on me, marketing's on Chris. The product's better. Like, and that might sound like I'm bragging and being a bit arrogant, but the product is better than what the vast majority of other people around me are delivering. And like I said, for relationships, maybe you are dying to be in a relationship or you're not happy with your relationship, you want to be in a better relationship. You maybe need to work on making the product, i.e. you, what you offer,
more attractive.
Effective.
So that you don't have to market it constantly.
Yeah, so you don't need to chase, you don't need to keep looking.
You don't have to be on Tinder all day.
Tinder, yeah.
I completely agree with that. And I like the fact that he says that you could spend your whole life trying to sell it to people.
Yeah.
But if it's good, you will get some amount of inbound inquiry.
Yeah.
And then of course that allows you to then improve your marketing with testimonials, with results,
yeah,
to produce more interest in the product off the back of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think like word of mouth is the most powerful driver on any business. Like paid ads, great. Marketing in any light, great. But I think having such a strong product that your clients do the selling for you it's going to be. I mean, Chris, a lot of your clients come internal. They come from people speaking to their mates and coming straight to you. A lot of our clients are the same. A lot of your podcast guests probably are coming through people that have been on with you and actually had a positive experience.
People introduce me to
and I think it's. It's funny because like I read that quote recently, but it's just something that's I've always naturally wanted to do. Part of that's a fear of like letting people down and people talking about something being shit. Like that's definitely like I would hate for someone to have a negative experience, and some people don't have that, which baffles me. But yeah, I've always had a big focus on just providing the best possible product or service or whatever that is.
Yeah, I think like again from a marketing standpoint and like from my kind of entry to marketing, which was copywriting, there's like a common saying, it's like world's best copy can't sell a shit offer.
Yeah,
like I could put my all into like the best sales page ever created, right?
Yeah,
but if I'm selling fucking snorkels for ferrets,
yeah,
like nobody's gonna buy it.
Yeah,
you know, so I think like a lot of people, and again this maybe speaking more to the business owners out there or whoever it is, the coaches, whatever, that like you're just putting a plaster over it if you're going with the latest marketing gimmick, which by the way will probably get you a little bit of some leads. Will get you something if you're launching a new offer every time, or you're tweaking your marketing, how you're showing up on social media. If you're putting all your effort into that, oh I need Hormozy style reels, oh I need this, oh I need to be saying this and using this angle of my marketing, and you're spending no time whatsoever again focused on your product, I'm telling you, you are missing and that's coming from somebody who makes his living in marketing, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I need people to hire me to do their marketing for them. But if I'm coming in and they offer, that's one thing, again, going back to what the previous point, like being better at looking at the clients I'm working with, it's like, is this offer actually any good? And it's a really difficult conversation to have with a client to say, this actually isn't good enough.
Yeah.
Like, you're not meeting, and again, and genuinely not blowing smoke, but working with you for so long and on so many projects and so many launches, I know what a good offer is.
Yeah.
I know what the standard
is. Especially you've seen it.
I've seen it, and it not just, and I've worked with all kinds of different clients, and you see it across the board, so you just get that experience and you just know, like, listen, this ain't it. This is what you think people need, and it ain't what they want, and it's not good enough, so.
And I think even if you were to work with the best marketing team, the best guy in paid ads, the best copywriter, the best guy in social media, let's say you get all these leads, you get all these sales, like you're going to get all these refunds as well. And that's so it almost doesn't matter. Like if your marketing's phenomenal, great. But once they buy, they're not going to fucking want it. So like you need to make the first thing, the offer, what they're getting, like so strong in my opinion.
And interestingly, what Hormozy did with his recent launch was that the product was so good and the marketing was so good.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, he still gave it away for free. But people during it were willing to pay 10,000, 2,000, whatever it was that he started to kind of do with his crosses and his knockdown, which was amazing to watch and understand the psychology of that as well. But the product was so good that people were willing to pay whatever. And that speaks to the fact that he's actioned that quote as well.
For sure.
But yeah, number two for me, again, a moment for everyone to take a shot because I'm going to mention James Clear and Atomic Habits. But chapter 12 is on the law of least effort. And the quote that I've pulled from that is, reducing the friction associated with good behaviors makes them easier to perform, and increasing the friction associated with bad behaviors makes them harder to do. Very obvious, but of course it works in both directions. So the more friction that you can create within your environment or within the cues or triggers to make you do a habit, the more likely you are to either adhere to a good one or stave off a bad one. So environment design, access to the cues for your habits are absolutely massive. So if I'm thinking from a personal perspective, I genuinely cannot remember a day where I've missed taking my supplements because I have them in a little pill box with 7 of each, and I do that every Sunday.
Yeah.
I have a resistance band that sits over my desk chair before I start work every day, and I do shoulder dislocations and band pull aparts because the only injury, touch wood, that I've ever really had with training has been impingement on my shoulder when I got a really strong bench and a really weak upper back when I was like 17. Alongside that, if I think about bad habits, I'm trying to get my personal phone away from my desk. I'm using app blockers on my phone or on my laptop when I'm trying to write or when I'm trying to do deep work or when I'm trying to design whatever I'm designing. So not only am I encouraging good habits with the pill box and having access to it or the resistance band, but I'm also using it to create friction where well, I can't open this app at the moment because it's blocked. So of course I can't look at my DMs or scroll or whatever it is. So using friction is an absolute game changer. And if you look at how, oh, Colin, how do you get so much done? That is probably one of the number one factors, because I create frictionless ability for me to do the good things, but also friction for me to overcome to try and do something which will steer me off course.
Yeah, I would say, I would add to that, that looking ahead for changes in your life is really important there to, again, remove friction or add friction ahead of time. So for example, I'm going to be a dad in February next year. I'm building a gym in my house.
Yeah.
I'm getting ahead of it.
Yeah.
Right away. We've not got our office anymore. We're just building a home office in our new home. We're making these things, I'm making things easier ahead of time because I know my other areas of my life are going to have more friction.
Yeah.
It's the kind of friction I can't wait to have, right? Because I'm going to be raising my child, but that is going to have a knock-on effect in other areas. So having a wee look ahead and thinking, right, okay, well, what changes do I need to make? What friction do I need to put in place? What friction do I need to remove?
Yeah. If I can remove the 20-minute drive to the gym each way, then I'm going to be fine.
Yeah,
if I can remove
exactly.
the drive to the office, then
yeah.
I've got more time to spend with my baby.
Yeah. But that can also be on almost like a weekly basis. It's almost kind of like just looking at maybe what challenge have I got coming up here, and what, how did, like, for example, if I sign a new client, you know, there's a little bit more work involved initially to get things up and running. So it's like, okay, well, that's more time. So what things could potentially fall apart? My training, my steps, my nutrition, you know. So it's almost kind of maybe like, obviously you have your straight habits. So every morning I wake up, I set my book on my desk, I set my journal on my desk. I've got Opal on my phone blocking all social media. I read for 10 minutes, I journal for however long, and then I start my work.
Yeah.
That's just, like, same with your supplements, that's just ongoing. But like week to week, there's going to be different things, you know, like we've just moved house. There's a lot of, a lot of kind of stuff going back and forth with tradesmen and all that. So it's like, well, I need to look ahead at the challenges here and, you know, add or remove friction as I see fit.
I think as an online coach and as someone that helps maybe like 1,000-ish people per year, like quite literally all we do is remove friction from a fitness perspective, remove the friction of providing a training plan so they've got something to do when they go to the gym, removing the friction of providing a meal plan or providing macros so that they've got an understanding of what to do from a nutrition perspective. So I think for me, like that is almost, I mean, you could say it's problem solving, but like that's what I would say we do as a coach. Like you're removing friction, you're making it easier for that person to do. And for me recently, you were talking about like planning ahead. I know that darker mornings make it way harder for me to wake up. I am normally such a morning person, like probably one of the first people awake, well, in my close circle, always up super early. But when it starts to get darker, I definitely struggle. Darker and colder, I struggle to get out of bed. So for me, it's like, well, how do I make that process easier? And I posted about this yesterday, but for me, like I've always just got a sun lamp alarm clock, but now I'm like, cool, I do set that, but I also set my clothes out the night before, and I also set my food out the night before, because I am less motivated generally in the morning, or maybe it's I set another alarm outside my room, so I need to get up to get that. So I suppose it's looking at like the things that, and it may be seasonal, like this is quite literally a seasonal thing. Once it gets bright again outside, I have zero issue getting up. But for me, like right now, I'm like, right, I need to remove that friction and make it as easy as possible to complete the harder thing. It's not a hard thing getting out of bed, but harder right now.
There's so many ways to do it, like app blockers, having the different alarms, having the sun coming on, whatever it is. Staying on track with your nutrition, cook for 2 hours on a Sunday, the vast majority of things you can eat, or they maybe sponsor this show at some point, clean foods will deliver to your door, whatever else. And by doing these things, you're making life easier or less likely to open the fridge and be like, well, I'll just have that.
Yeah.
Same as like having it in the house.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh, if there's,
totally.
Like how many clients do you have that are like, I just cannot have just one of, I don't know, a Kit Kat or whatever biscuit is. And you're like, well, I'm going to give you some news here.
Not having
unfortunately,
it there.
Probably just not going to buy it at all.
Totally.
And have it
I
not in
your diet.
I
completely disagree with that toxic opinion.
Excuse you, you're a chronic binge eater.
Completely disagree.
You burn it off with your Zercher squats.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Zercher squats. No,
that's my next quote.
Why do you do these?
But yeah, I really think if people are looking at how they can adhere to more of the good things or do less of the bad things, just make it easier, make it harder as much as possible.
Totally.
Number three for you, Chris.
This is one I just saw recently. I really liked it. And it's from a guy called Kunal Shah, who's an entrepreneur. I believe he kind of went to school in America, but he's based in India now. a kind of tech entrepreneur, and his quote was, "Years of experience don't matter, experience per year matters." And I thought that was quite a cool way of framing that. I think especially to people who are starting out on a new venture, be it starting your own business, or actually, you know, anything we talk about on here, mm-hmm. which is, you know, fitness, business, or whether that's in a corporate career, or if you're running your own business, it's like, how much experience can you pack in to your life as possible? I think this is something I've been thinking about recently, and it's been coming up in my journal. It's like, being an interesting person is a hack in life, mm-hmm. I would say, for whatever you are going to do. Like for me, being interesting makes my own writing better. It means that I have something to say to my, albeit small, audience, but it means I've got stuff to say and I've got experiences to pull from. You know, saying yes to more things, trying more new things, you know. So what are your experience per year? Because you can do the same thing for 5 years, you know. Say you go to the same place on holiday and you've got the same routine, you're saying this, saying that. It's like, what are you really? Mm-hmm. And like, you're very set and a great routine, but you've still got a lot of experience per year. You're talking to all different people. So I'm not talking about like drastically changing your daily routine for the sake of it, like, what experience? I think that applies to so many different things.
Create novelty in the areas that you want to, and you'll learn a lot more stuff. So like, yeah. Even like, let's give a really ridiculous example. I'm playing golf with different people. I'm training with different people.
Yeah.
I'm having different conversations on the podcast weekly. So even within your set domains that you're choosing to spend your time,
yep.
you can still create more experience and learning points than if you just did the same thing over and over again, like you say.
Absolutely, yeah. Like I had started writing fiction this year, writing short stories.
Children's books or
terrible
adults?
At it. Definitely not children's books.
Children's books. Can you imagine him writing a children's book?
Well, he's just about to have a child. God. I think that
would be horrible. That kid would just be the most brutal wee guy ever. Or wee girl. I don't know what it'd be.
Wow. Stand by for maybe what baby burns. Aye.
I read this slightly differently when I first read it. Right. Years of experience don't matter. Experience per year. I kind of read this as that my initial like thought went to, I've got clients that come to us that have been trying to lose fat for 5 years and they've got nowhere. Mm. And I've got clients that come to us and in 12 weeks, they accomplish more than some people have accomplished in 5 years. So I kind of read it as, it's like, you need to get the right experience in a short period of time is more useful than any sort of experience for an expanded period of time. That's kind of how I read that initially. Because it kind of just makes me think of Danielle Douglas, who won the 12-week peak last year, who arguably has one of the most impressive female physiques that we've ever had as a client, and everyone thinks she achieved that in like a 12-week time frame, which isn't the case. She spent years building muscle and then achieved that. But you get clients that are like, I know, but I've also been training for 5 years the same as her. It's like, yeah, but you've been doing the wrong shit for 5 years, or you've not been doing a good enough job in those 5 years. And it sounds like harsh and it sounds brutal, but yeah, exactly. I viewed that as the quality of experience is much more important than, I suppose, the quantity of experience to an extent.
Yeah, I think both could be true. I think as long as you've got a good idea of like what the experiences you're going for, mm-hmm. you know. So for example, like with me, I'm not just like talking about a completely random variety of experience and just saying yes to everything, because then that's just diluting it down and you're not getting anything from that. But if you know yourself well enough and you know what you want, then it's like, okay, well, you know, what kind of things, what kind of different experiences can I have within that? So for me, I'm not writing fiction for any clients. I'm not a ghostwriter or anything like that. But like, it's probably going to have some carryover to the writing I do for clients and the copywriting that I do. But it's just like working that muscle in a slightly different way.
More strings to the bow.
Yeah.
That's another term, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, I think come back to the whole being interesting thing. That's just a good thing to be as a human. Yeah. It's going to get you places, even if it's just a talking point that you've got with somebody to make a new connection.
Mm-hmm. Saying yes to more things, then, that was one of the, the things. What does that look like for you, apart from maybe writing fiction?
I think I think honestly, when I hear that, it means like getting offered things and saying yes, right? Which is not necessarily how I think about it, because a lot of the time you're almost kind of making yourself offers in your own head. So mm-hmm. Right now, I am getting into... I've always been a really keen cook, but I want to really master Asian cooking. That's my favourite cuisine. I want to master Asian cooking, so I'm going to try to master a recipe.
We're going for dinner?
Yeah.
Nippon Kitchen,
here we come. I know, I'll be asking the chefs how they do it. So again, that's something like nobody's offered me a trip to an Asian cooking class or anything like that, but all these little maybe thoughts that if they appear like repeatedly in your mind, then perhaps maybe say yes to one and be like, okay, well, this is a new thing. Maybe either it's a new hobby or whatever it is, or a new part of your routine. Give it a go, man.
I feel like you would hate. I don't know if you would. You can tell me if I'm wrong. Uh-huh. I feel like you would hate going to a cooking class.
I'd absolutely despise. Yeah, yeah. I've been to one and I did not like the guy.
I can just imagine you like 6'4" or whatever you are, and it's just all these like middle-aged wee women, and you're like, just can't imagine you enjoying that
Chris
experience.
Chris has read the book in advance, and he's like, "This is not been taught correctly."
No. Not for me.
I think one of the things that kind of concept brings up to me is the number of people that you see working in a corporate career, and similar to David's example with fat loss or training, they've just been like, oh, I've worked in this company for 5 years or 10 years, but just doing stuff at a really average or low
mediocre level.
So you're like, I'd rather take advice from the person that did this for 1 year and smashed it than the person that kind of toted along at a mediocre level for 5 years, because the number of reps you've done, they're substandard reps.
Whereas
the guy that's like been brilliant within a year, I'd much rather learn from him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that.
Absolutely.
Okay, David, number three for you?
I'm going to go with... So this podcast called what? Standing in the Shoulders of Giants.
Yeah.
This is Standing in the Shoulders of a Giant Bellend, but... And it's Grant Cardone, right?
Oh, God.
But there's some relevance to it. So it's just quite literally the 10X rule. And I'm only bringing it up because I think when you first gave me this kind of podcast idea, I just immediately started going through what things across the last 10 years, I would say, had the biggest positive like net impact. And psycho-cybernetics was definitely one. I think Alex Hormozi in the last two and a half, three years has been definitely another. And one genuinely for like probably a two-year time frame, albeit when I was 21, was Grant Cardone, and he's got two books that I've read maybe 3-4 times in that time frame. One's called Be Obsessed or Be Average. They are cringe books, but the other one's called The 10X Rule, and the kind of premise behind that is whatever your goal is, multiply it by 10 and aim for that instead. And again, it sounds so super simple, but I think growing up in the west of Scotland, like, most of the goals that you set are either shat on or they're like, that ain't gonna happen. Like, if you set a big goal and you tell anyone, it's like, shut the fuck up, like, that is not gonna happen. And I think when you have any inputs like that, maybe like, what age would that have been, like 20, 21, working in a budget gym, like, you weren't surrounded by maybe the most positive influences. And I did have some like pretty big-ish goals, or big compared to maybe the people around me. So yeah, I think for me, when I read that, and I think I read it directly after Psycho-Cybernetics, and they were quite well linked in the sense of they were just about like vocalizing what you want a little bit more and aiming for way more than what you think you can, because I think setting the goal initially, even if you don't get there, I think the premise to me is like, if you set it as 10 times higher than what you want, even if you don't get there, you're going to be much better off, much closer than just the initial small goal type thing. And that helped me massively in the first kind of 2, 3, 4 years of my personal development journey. So as much as I think he's a total tool now, it was a very useful state of mind to have back then, when I was a lot younger.
One of the things he speaks about in 10X as well is about 10X the effort to achieve the goal that you expect as well. So everything becomes 10X, all links in, as you would imagine.
You could finish that in one chapter, really, that book, couldn't you? It's like 10 long.
10X.
When I was becoming friendly with David back in like 2017, we were both listening to the ebook. Maybe it was your second listen, maybe it was my first listen. And working in sales, understanding that for you to get 100 grand of sales, you have to have a pipeline worth a million.
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty useful thing to hear from somebody that's been really successful and has coached many people to be successful too. So working back from that, it was just about being more aspirational. And like you say, different sources at different periods of time will speak to you and will be correct. Now you wouldn't benefit from reading that book based on where you're at, but there might be somebody who's younger listening to this that doesn't quite realize the necessity of having outrageous goals and outrageous levels of effort and graft to get towards it can be really helpful as too. And it's just about utilizing who you listen to at that period of time and get the most from it. And totally. You've got lots from it.
Massively. And I think even right now there's people that I'm influenced by that in 5 years' time I'll be like, I can't believe I listened to them. Like,
it's naturally
going to happen. But yeah, that was just, it was funny because I was like, the rest of them are still people that I suppose value a lot from, and I was looking at him and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna put that in, because I suppose it shows that you can also change your view on someone but still have taken something positive from them.
Absolutely. And there's that whole concept that Zuby was speaking about when he interviewed Andrew Tate the first time about you don't have to eat the cow bones and all. You can maybe pick bits from them. Like, so the rump steak from the cow could be Grant Cardone's 10x rule, and the rest of it you could say no thank you. And that's absolutely fine, and that's allowed. And I think you're allowed to take on board massive amounts of that. And I think the number of people that would benefit from just thinking that bit bigger and realizing how much more it's going to take to get to where you want to get to, positive.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. I did kind of adopt that when I first started trying to get clients, in terms of like 10x in my output and effort with cold pitching, because that's how I got my initially started. So I think it's a great, like I say, it's a great concept, but you made a good point about this 10x effort as well.
Yeah,
you can't just say 10x your goals and then put in the same amount of effort. The two have to go hand in hand, don't they? If you're going to get anywhere close,
you get a lot of people that talk the game, but then they're terrified by the fact that, oh my god, I might actually have to do all this work to get there.
I
think it relates back to the first quote about self-image. Like, it's about reaching for a higher level of yourself, much higher than you think you're capable of. And I've always said this, like, fake it till you make it, and some people are so against that, but for me that's actually been useful as well at points. Equally, it's maybe not in all instances, but like faking it till I make it from a financial standpoint, like I am going to earn X amount, and that fucking helped me, like, to quite a high degree back in the day. It's maybe not something that I like internalize and speak to myself about quite as much now, but I think way back when, I mean, I grew up by parents who didn't earn exuberant amounts of money, they earned pretty like a decent, like, normal living. I didn't really see that any sort of level of aspiration from a financial standpoint. So for that, it allowed me to go, do you know what? Like, obviously it is possible. Mm. People like Grant Cardone have done it. Like, but yeah, it was useful.
Yeah, you've taken a lot from him. Number three for me is from Nirial, who's been on the podcast, and he spoke about being indistractable and getting things done. And his main philosophy and method of doing that is time boxing. Mm-hmm. Now, I've always been an advocate of a to-do list, in particular a written to-do list, but he absolutely shat all over that. And when you understand his methods, you'll understand why, because they're forever expanding and you're kind of never done. I don't know anyone that ever completes all those to-do lists, and there's always stuff that spills into the next day. So he advocates time boxing your schedule instead. And it's basically just a fancy definition, and what he describes it as is implementation intention, or in other words, write out what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. And if anyone's ever watched David's stories and seen his Google calendar, they'll know exactly what that looks like. So for example, for me, it might be between 6 and 7, I'm stretching, supplements, shower, walk, and it's in the diary. Between 8 and 9, it's post on LinkedIn, it's send 2 outbound DMs for podcast guests, whatever it is. And yes, those are items that I'm ticking off, but I know exactly within my structure when they're going to happen, including training, including everything else. And it actually, from doing it, it pushes back against Parkinson's law, where the work that you've got expands to the time that you allow for it. But also, it builds in more time for me to have what I would call conscious rest. And that's something I spoke about with Dr. Julie as well. So many high performers that she works with don't build in conscious times of like slowing down or something of leisure. But through time boxing, I actually build in. So I'll put when I'm going to play golf, I'll put when I'm going to train, I'll put when I'm going to go a walk. And it means that I'm actually quite confident. I'm like, oh, what are all these spaces in my calendar? There's not many spaces in my calendar, but I start to fill them with things that are recharging my batteries rather than just working graft.
From a mental health perspective, not from me, but for clients that we've recommended doing that to, it's been the biggest change, like bigger than anything. See, just giving people structure. People do not realize, if they've never had structure in their life, they're like, wake up, you know, it's a riot of a morning, like everything's hectic, they go to work, it's a riot when they come home, they need to organize everything. Like, giving people that structure and just being like, look, be really meticulous with this, like plan out quite literally every hour, every half an hour, for a short time frame. Like, I don't plan every minute of my waking life all of the year, but there's certainly sprints or there's time frames, whether it's 3, 6, 9 weeks, that I really do plan every single hour. And don't get me wrong, it doesn't always go to plan, but I think having that plan to fall back on has been massive. And I think for me more recently, I've made a little bit of change on this. I think he's quite specific with like, in these hours, I'm going to do this very specific task. More recently, what's worked for me, and maybe it'll work for other people, is I've kind of got two to-do lists. I've got one that's 3 tasks and it's just big weekly to-dos, and there's only 3 things that go in there on a Sunday night. And then I've just got other stuff that needs done at some point. It's not called that. But the first 2.5 hours of my day from 6 to 8:30 is just any sort of thing relating to those big tasks. Because for me, I actually found it quite difficult to be like, okay, Monday morning, I must do that very specific task. Sometimes I woke up and I did not feel like doing that, and it wasn't really getting the attention, I suppose, I could have put into it when I maybe felt in a better headspace for that. So now I'll have like the three big tasks. I'll have 2.5 hours at the start of every single day. And then I'm doing something related to those three big tasks in that 2.5 hour time frame. And if I get that done, amazing. That's kind of like, that's been super helpful for me recently.
Yeah. I think you also need to consider the style of tasks that you're doing and perhaps thinking about where you can group them together. So for instance, for me, doing like a lot of writing work, which would be classed as deep work stroke creative work, you know, finding when's the best time for you to do that, which is advice people have probably heard before. But sometimes what I find is if you have things that, maybe this is going against what anybody else says, but say I've got a morning block where I'm doing writing for 2.5-3 hours. Obviously there's breaks in there. I'm not writing solid for 2.5-3 hours. Mostly I'm sitting on my laptop crying.
Listen to Eric Fritz.
Listen to Eric Fritz. I'm going to be rave to myself.
With a white monster.
Well, a white monster or two or three, yeah. Depending how the days went. And then you've went through that writing block. Sometimes it's quite good just then just maybe to have like a life admin block or an admin block, you know, just to break up, because if you know that there's things that need to be done, this can niggle the back of your mind sometimes. And then like, so I'm just saying in terms of like, if you go from like, say you go from like a deep work block and then you say you've got, because I've made this mistake, and you go into like say lunch or you train or you go for a walk and you come back and try and repeat that block again, maybe just go into something that's a bit easier. You know, you can maybe just like tick off a few admin tasks, send a few emails, do a few life things, and then see if that can then maybe get you back into a maybe slightly less intense.
You've spoken to about this before, build some momentum.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that whole, for me, that whole like eat the frog thing just doesn't work.
Yeah, we spoke about that last time.
Yeah, I write the easiest email first. I do the easiest bit of writing work, get the win in, and
walk
then
before you can run.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like as you're applying that across your day, you're kind of looking at like, where's my energy going to be? Where's my focus going to be? How can I peak at the right times? You know, because really you've only got one big deep work block in you per day, really, right? But sometimes with the level of work you have, maybe you need to get another one in, but maybe you can just be like, right, okay. So I know this is a very specific example, but I'm sure you can apply it to whatever you do. I'll do maybe like the writing in the morning, and then maybe it's like editing in the afternoon, which is still creative because you still need to be on point. Yeah. And that's actually, to get specific about writing, like that's what fucking matters, right? Editing is what matters, not writing, editing. So then you go and edit the work. So it's still a creative block, but it's a bit less intense, and you've got all the life admin out of the way, and you know that when this is done, you're going to train, or you're going to just fucking be horizontal on the couch, do whatever you want to do. So I think like maybe looking at your energy and your focus levels and things like that is also important when you're trying to apply that.
I'm going
to
combine this with something called the energy calendar, which Sahil Bloom told me about in the podcast. Probably again one of the wisest guests that I've had on, and he was talking about what you can do is you can color code at the end of the day or at the end of the week. So red might be tasks that you felt drained your energy, yellow might be where you were neutral, and green might be gave you energy. And in your week you will actually have a visual display. And then what you can start to do is batch energy draining tasks into either specific windows where you are going to be in the best position to deal with them, or if you're in position, you can cut them out or outsource them if that's possible for you as well. And then he started to like, he was like, oh, I work best in the morning. So Chris, in the same way, is having his deep work block with his white monster in his cave writing. That's probably, it's probably your hardest task, but at times it's green, at times it's red. It depends on where you're at.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does depend.
I was going to say that exact same thing, because I tried that task because I color code my calendar, and I was like, I'm going to do it based on like what's giving me energy or what's drained my energy. What I found though is like the same task could be both in the same week. So sometimes creating content for me is a fucking bollock, obviously. Other times I'm like, I feel good doing this. I want to film all these videos. I want to take all these photos and I want to make all this stuff. So I did try that. I found it useful as a task to do, but I didn't. It's not something that I would see myself doing consistently, because sometimes I'm like, sometimes I just don't feel good doing that.
See, with that though, see if what I found, I've never color coded, but I do kind of keep track of that. What I find is, see if something gives you energy sometimes and doesn't give you energy other times, even if you don't realize it, you're probably better prepped for that block when it gave you energy than when you didn't.
So you probably, what did you do before that?
Exactly.
Before, or you trained before it, or after it.
Or you just came to the table with better ideas as well, because like for me, again, with writing and like, so we're sending, at my age, we send 40 plus emails a week across all our clients.
Just empty in.
Just empty in.
Putting
the Fat Loss Project.
There will be next week.
Yeah, there will be. Just you fucking strap in, by the way. Our least popular program's launching.
Imagine wanting to get muscular.
I know. We send like a lawyer, and that's just emails, and we've got other things going on as well. So like there's so much that goes into that, that then I've got to go and do my own stuff, you know, my own email list, my own writing. So I find that some days I sit there and I stare at the screen, I'm just like, this is fucking pointless. This cursor's just blinking at me. This is hopeless. But when I go and the words start coming, it's like, well, I've came here better prepared. Like, I fired off an email today with a story about a really bad haircut I got a few weeks ago. And I was like, that idea came to me on holiday. I had so many ideas on holiday. I've came back with an absolute litany of ideas, and I know my creative blocks are going to be really, really energizing, but the days I turn up empty handed and I've not been diligent with taking notes, or perhaps I've slacked on my reading that week and I've not been pulling ideas to different people, that's when,
or not doing as many things and being interesting.
Yeah, being interesting, exactly. Yeah. So I think that's maybe something to look at if your energy levels are varying in the same thing.
But if I look at both your calendars, you time box in some form.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
So the proof's kind of in the pudding.
Definitely. He's bang on. He is bang on. And his book's fantastic. I would highly recommend people read his book.
If when I spoke to him, he was like, this is not an attack on you doing a to-do list, but how many times in your work meeting, in your work life, if you work in a corporate career, people put meetings in your diary that are at set times that always happen maybe on a weekly basis. There's probably other things that you do in your work life that you should probably program in the same way. So
yeah.
I had a call 3 till 4 today talking about leads that we produce for clients who are renting furniture for or doing show flats or show houses. That happens at 3 p.m. every single week. I can't miss it. But before it at 2 p.m., I have particular outbound stuff that I always do every single week in that window. And that wasn't forced upon me by the company because it's not a meeting I have to turn up to, but it's a set of tasks that I agree to do every single time. So it's really positive. You can do things in the same way.
Yeah.
Chris, you've got a number 4?
I do. It's from Chris Voss, who is the author of Never Split the Difference. Highly recommend.
Negotiating.
Yes. Is it FBI?
Former head FBI hostage negotiator turned entrepreneur.
He delivers talks at delivers universities and stuff,
doesn't he? Talks, and obviously he's coaching and consulting services. Again, he's works on like kind of hedge funds and stuff like that. He's working with pretty high level people, but there's a lot of really cool stuff you can take from the book, both for business and life, I would say. A lot of really good communication points. But this quote is really, really interesting, and it's, when you get good at getting what you want, you don't realize how often you missed something better.
This is the one I read in my head like 7 times.
David's confused.
When you get good at getting what you want,
you don't realise how often you missed something better. So I'll give you an example, right, if that helps.
That will.
So, so I wanted more clients when I first started my business, and obviously I still want them now. But when you first start out, you're just looking for clients. And I wasn't just taking any old clients, to be fair, but you're just looking at clients signing up on a good rate. For me, it was a good monthly retainer rate. But I missed the opportunity to sign people at an even higher rate. So 2 clients could have been 1 client for the same money or for more money. So that's a very basic example. But again, it maybe ties into that 10x rule. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you're good at getting like those kind of goals that are maybe just outside your reach. You maybe got your brushing them with your fingertips, but with all the energy you put into that, could you have redirected that and maybe played the longer game and got something even better, you know? Because, for instance, I know that I can send out a pitches next week to a handful of clients, start conversations, and probably have another retainer signed up within the next 2 months. I know I can do that. But could I reach out to perhaps a larger client, a bit more of a whale client, and get an even bigger retainer signed on in a long-term partnership and work with somebody that's really doing something in an industry and really driving it? You know, that's the kind of idea we're getting at here.
He
maybe
uses the term good there, doesn't he?
Yes, good.
So the good is the enemy of the great, and the great is the enemy of the best.
Yeah.
Insert cheesy motivational lion roaring on Instagram or, or somebody with a Spartan shark shield and short. Yeah, there we go, a shark. Yeah, that's it. I can completely see that. So by doing really well in something, you maybe neglect the chance to go up a level.
Yeah, I think that's what it means to me anyway. It's about reaching for...
David, what about what you're doing with your fitness now?
What, trying to get fit?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
So you are in good shape, aren't you? relatively speaking, okay. But you know that there's levels that you could tap into that you've been to before and maybe you want to go to now. So by being quite good for so long, you've maybe neglected the fact that you could be great or better.
Yeah.
Would that be fair? Because you've started getting coached again.
Yes, I have actually, which has been an interesting experience for the last week. I don't think I've had a coach. Do you know who my coach was? Remember when I lived in Dubai?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Let's not go into him.
Let's not name him.
This is a fitness coach, but I think I just read this differently. When you get good at getting what you want, you don't realise how often you miss something better. I actually thought this was relating to when you're working towards something, you don't realise that you're missing out on
better things along the way or other options.
Yeah, other options so along
maybe
the way.
You get the blinkers on. You could read it like that.
Yeah. Honestly, I was reading this in the car before this. And I was like, I actually don't understand. You don't realise how often you miss something better.
I see it because I think you could use the blinkers example. So like you're doing really well in this particular industry, but your skill set is such, like Chris Voss, for example, he was probably doing really well as an FBI negotiator. But now he's probably having a shit ton more impact by being a speaker and giving the lessons about negotiation and how to talk to people.
So he's focusing on something that he didn't realise was other opportunities perhaps around him.
That are
bigger and better. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like you said there, because now I get your analogy. Yeah. I think for me, like from a fitness perspective, I'd always focused on aesthetics, for example. And I think now I'm starting to realise that there maybe is other important aspects of fitness that I've neglected. So yeah, I get that analogy now. Honestly, I was reading that before. I feel like it was like double negatives. Yeah. I was like,
there's a caveat of a caveat. I can completely see that. Sometimes you are just doing well in a particular area and you're maybe missing out on the fact that maybe I could land this bigger client if I just pushed the boat out that little bit more, or maybe I took a slightly different approach or a better approach.
Yeah, I think that's it. That probably applies to what you do as well. You know, you're maybe like within a certain kind of, almost I would say a comfort zone of like, but it's actually kind of, it is a comfort zone in a way, I suppose, but like you're still getting the benefit. You're still getting wins. You're getting wins, you're getting consistent wins. But, you know, there's bigger ones out there for you.
Completely
and
agree.
You get trapped by that because it's a feedback loop. It's like, yeah, well, I'm getting this type of client, or I'm getting this type of progress with my training, or I'm getting this fulfillment from my relationship, whatever it is. But then it's like, well, there could be something better out there for you. Maybe have a think about that, you know?
Yeah, I spoke to you guys about some of the guests that I was aiming for in recent months, and I didn't get some of them. But
we're here.
It's positive It's positive.
After extensive negotiations.
Let's go to Nippon Kitchen after the podcast. Sounds good. Can we talk about Alex Ramosi? Yes, we can talk about Alex Ramosi. But understanding that what I'm delivering with the podcast right now is really good, but I am open-minded to the fact that there's more and more that I can keep going with.
Definitely.
But it's very easy to coast 100% because if you look at, in the same way as your client bases, my podcast roster of people that I can probably get on is getting better and better over time. But could it take a jump by me suddenly getting, I don't know, a James Smith or a Jake Humphries that you guys spoke about?
Yeah.
Of course it could, because that would probably open up all the people that are in their peer group that would be a level up from other guests that I've had on, which is a cool thought.
Absolutely, absolutely.
David, you've got a couple left, but let's pick one of them.
Yeah, I'll pick this one. Mostly because it relates back to what you just stated about consistently getting wins, but also relating back to time blocking, using a calendar. And I think for me, the calendar can act as getting quick wins. And the quote is Mark Manson, who is an author. Would he be an entrepreneur? I suppose he probably is.
Maybe, in some regard.
The book is The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. And the quote is, to be happy, we need something to solve. Happiness is therefore a form of action. Now, I've probably said on this podcast in the past, progress equals happiness, something that I am strong on. But when we're talking about like the calendar aspect there, like for me, when I have a set goal and when I have a set problem to solve, that is when I feel my best. And when I don't have that and I don't have clarity on my goals, when I don't have clarity on what problem that I'm trying to solve, I definitely feel way more lost. So, and that's why, like, if I have a weekend, like, I drink a lot more than definitely a lot more than you and definitely a lot more than you. when I have a weekend that I've maybe drank too much, I've went out and I've stayed up all night, whatever that is, my clarity and my goals just goes to shit. So it's not like nothing's really changed from week to week. It's just my clarity on what problem I'm trying to solve that week just goes. When I take a break from work, when I go on a holiday, when I take a trip, I almost always spend a little bit of time reflecting and thinking about like, what are the next problems that I am going to solve? And that is when it's when I feel the most fulfilled. But the way that I like to view that from a calendar or from time blocking is every little allotted block of time is just like a little problem to solve each day. I'm never going to do something massive in that hour and a half. I'm never going to do something massive in that half an hour window. But having maybe like six blocked out time frames, one's the big task, one's going to be training, one's going to be chilling and napping, one's going to be like the menial task or life admin or whatever. Having like six of those per day, it's just six little mini problems that I'm solving every single day. And I think the level of happiness, I suppose, or fulfillment I get from that is massive. So yeah, I think if you are very unhappy in your life right now, that's somewhere to look. It's obviously not the answer, but like, what problems have you got? Like, what good problems, I suppose, as well, but like, what problems are you solving right now? And I think having stuff like that in your life is super
purpose,
important.
Isn't it? Yeah. And how many of the guests that I've spoken to about men's mental health have talked about the fact that men need some sort of purpose or journey or mission to go on, even if it's really small, like you say, it might be one of the tasks that you tick off, or I trained today.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that's a problem that you solved, because at the moment you're overweight and you don't look the way you want to look. Well, I've taken a positive step in action towards changing that. That's a positive vote in the right direction, and your brain chemistry will respond to that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's stacking the wins, like Chris said a second ago. Like, I think stacking those consistent wins, it just pays massive dividends.
Yeah, I think there's two questions I ask myself periodically. It's like an exercise in my journaling, and it's what am I achieving, and who am I becoming?
Yeah.
And I think asking yourself those two questions. Because I think when I look at like, what am I achieving, I'm looking at finances, but I'm looking at fitness, you know, and things. But the who am I becoming question, that's more relative to my relationships.
Is it helping you become? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, what can I pair? And again, you need to have some sort of idea of who you would like to be and how you would like to show up for certain people in your life, you know, and do those and listen. See, when you do these things, I always like to make this very clear. See, when you do these things, you're going to get some rude awakenings at times, because this is the whole fucking point. You're going to find out sometimes that I am doing absolutely nothing to become the person that I would like to become.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point. So then you can change course and you can make adjustments. But I think like that kind of ties into what you're saying, you know, and because I think you also find out progress within those questions as well. You realize like, no, do you know what, yep, that was really good, I showed up well in this area, and I've made these achievements within my career and within my fitness or whatever it is. I think that's a good way to stack the wins. And
a similar question allows me to prioritize tasks, and it's just like, what problem is this solving? Like, what am I actually solving by doing this? And I think like, if I've got, you know, like, I have an overwhelming amount of things to do on a weekly basis, as we all do. But like, I'll quite literally look at them, and like I spoke about a second ago, like, finding my big three tasks that week is quite literally like, what problem does this one solve? What problem does this solve? Right, okay, that's how I'm going to prioritize those ones. And it's generally like the biggest problem that I can solve for that week period or for that month period are the ones that I can select. So I think from a prioritizing workload standpoint, it's a really useful question to ask.
One of the best frameworks that I was given in my early career in sales was, does it make the boat go faster? So sometimes people will be like picking the best cover photo for their LinkedIn post that might generate some leads or might improve their brand. Or could you research the business that you're about to have an hour-long meeting with so that you can come on and impress the CFO or whoever it is you're meeting about what you know about them?
Return.
Yeah. Or is it that you book in those five calls that you said that you were going to make last week but you didn't make? That's probably going to make the boat go faster, because at least then you might reach out to new leads or make new prospects rather than, I don't know, picking the perfect photo that will do well on the algorithm.
Yeah, I think like we briefly mentioned this earlier, we're talking about our quote, but sometimes a win can be your floor rising. You know, it's like, and I know that might sound like a bit of a cop-out, but like, so sometimes you do go through times where, yeah, you know what, maybe not a lot of wins are coming your way the way that you would define wins, you know? Because like, we all know that that dopamine response tails off. I used to run around my house with all my gear off when I signed a new client. Then I'm just like, cool, you start Monday. And it's not because I don't appreciate them any less, but that's just the
becomes
reality.
The norm.
It becomes the norm. But like, sometimes when you realize that, well, do you know what? Like, my floor Like, you know, my minimum standard has risen so far.
Yeah.
From you've what hedonically adapted. Yeah, yeah. There we go. There's another klaxon. I'll say what hanging fruit next.
Yeah, I think that's another way to maybe look sometimes if you've gone through a bit of a dry spell with wins, perhaps to maybe just let you realize that you're not, like, you know, completely hopeless.
Yeah.
You know, I used to dream about the life I'm living now, whatever.
Yeah.
You want to
yeah.
Use.
However you want to frame it, whatever mm-hmm. works for you, man.
Or on the opposite end of that, well, to an extent, when you, like, the quote, to be happy, we need something to solve. I've often found the times that I'm the most unfulfilled and unhappy is quite literally after I've solved a massive problem. So this year, for example, 12-week peak finished, we had a massive black tie ball. That was a huge problem in the sense of, like, I had to run this ball with like 300 people, I had to figure out what to say, which didn't go to plan. I had to figure out, you know, all these moving parts were there. And after that, I was like, the next few days, I wasn't depressed, but there was a certainly a come down. So I think having a constant state of small goals, but also that big longer term 10-year goal is such a useful thing to have, or that 10-year problem. Like, what is, like, goals and problems are, they can largely be viewed in a similar way. Mm-hmm. And I think having those more recently is like, I reset when I was in Portugal last summer. I reset, like, longer term goals. Like, for the last maybe year or so, I'd only had 3, 6, 9, 12 month goals. And every time I'd achieve them, I'd feel that like sense of, like,
a little bit of a slump.
Slump, yeah. And I think since resetting longer term business goals, life goals, relationship goals, whatever they might be, I've not had that slump. Maybe I've not achieved anything, though. Maybe that's why. But no, I think having those big ones and breaking
the
them down,
still
massive, it's still
way.
There. It's something else to strive towards.
Yeah, that's weird, because I suck at short-term goals, but I've always had a long-term.
That's the most useful.
Clear vision
that's
of
more
what
useful.
I want. Yeah. Like, I've really, like, and it's developed over the years, obviously, yeah. But I've always had a very, very clear, even like, certain milestone terms, like when I'm 35, this is going to happen, when I'm 40, yeah. This is going to happen. But see, in between those times, I've always been so bad so bad at setting goals in that time frame.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everyone's got different strengths and weaknesses, don't they? And by learning about what other people's are, you can maybe be like, oh, maybe I'll take some of what David does with that, and maybe I'll take some of what Chris does with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, sure. Fantastic. Right, well, I'll take us home with number four for me, which is from Dr. Julie Gerner, who I think I'm going to be sharing lessons from throughout the rest of the next 100 or so episodes of the podcast, because there's so many. But one of the frameworks she shared was caring deeply and challenging directly. And this is a framework and a thought process on how to give feedback and cause a positive impact after you give the feedback, even if the message you've had to deliver is a hard or a perhaps unpleasant one for the person that you're giving the feedback to hear. And one of the things that she said, which is so important, is that people can take hard feedback from someone they feel's in their corner and trying to help them and want the best for them and themselves and together as a unit. Mm-hmm. And she creates what she would call an us versus them problem, or us versus problem, rather than a me versus you. And Julie was given the kind of classic example, anyone that's worked in a corporate business will have experienced this, but like marketing v sales. So the sales team might go barging into the marketing office and be like, look, we've got less leads than before, our sales are down, what the hell are you doing about it? Whereas solving it together would be, look, how can we get together to produce better collateral or produce better content or help generate more inbound leads? Yeah. What do you need from me that I can bring to the table that we can both create together and put out there? Mm-hmm. And you're much more likely to get a positive response than somebody getting their back up and being like, oh, well, we're doing what we can, like, you guys need to do this. Yeah. And you lead with that, let's collaboratively solve this. And again, one of the fun examples she gave was like, you wouldn't necessarily take like the friend jean shopping with you who always says you look great regardless, or the friend that always says you look terrible. Yeah. You need to find somebody that'd be like, I want you to look your best, so why don't you go to this shop and buy these jeans or whatever it is.
Yeah, I've got a really real world example of that. A member of my team across maybe the last 6 months, like, they were underperforming to a degree. And it just kept getting to me, and I kept having the conversation of like, you need to do this, you need to do this, like, why is this not happening? And I was probably coming at it from a bit of a, there was a level of anger in there, definitely. And then week by week, month by month, nothing was changing. I probably had this chat 3 times, and I was like, I can't have this again. Like, this is going nowhere, this isn't working. And I had a call with somebody else on my team, actually, about it. And he was like, well, why don't you actually solve the problem with them, like sit down with them for an extended period of time. And I've done that, and the change in the last 3 months with this person has been outstanding, like unbelievable. And the main difference was, instead of me going, why the fuck is this not changing, you do this thing, it was more of a case of like, let's meet every week, we will do this thing together. And I think going at it with that angle from a level of like care worked really well. Equally, I think everyone, not everyone, I think people respond very differently to that. I've got another member in the team that if I was to do that, they would be like, get the fuck, like, just tell me what to do and I'll go and do it. But yeah, I think it depends on the personality of that person. But equally, in this instance, spending that time of like, we will solve this together, we will do this, was like, it's been such a learning curve this year.
And you're up against the problem rather than the two of you
button heads about it. Yeah, totally.
We did a similar thing. I just told the story on a podcast I was on without David for once, so I didn't know what to do myself.
I really enjoyed it though. It was good.
But the corporate we had, Brett, who's fantastic, his work took a little bit of a slump 2 or 3 months into working with us, and the feedback we gave him, it was like, this is what's happened. What do we need to do to fix it? Mm-hmm. You know, together, can we? And we gave. I was giving. Can we give you more insight into the clients you're writing for? You know, can we help on the ideal generation side of things? Like, mm-hmm. do you need recommendations for certain resources to go and look at to pull for ideas from? And his response to me is like, he actually said, thanks for raising this with me, I'll get to work. And he got to work, mm-hmm. and he's been absolutely phenomenal since. But like, again, we did make it clear that we want to fix this. This isn't me just pointing something out and saying, go and sort it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Or this is your last warning. It wasn't
nothing
like that,
at all. Nothing like that at all. It's like, listen, we have to flag this issue. I know this is a little bit uncomfortable, but like, what can I know? I take it back to when I was in hospitality, and like, where I worked in hospitality, somewhere in Glasgow, I was always the you won't be surprised at this. When I've got to imagine, I was always a person that had to chin people when they had BO, right? When they were stinking, right? I always had to tell.
I've got a great story.
Had to do it, but I've done it in a way where I thought it was being nice. I was like, listen, here's the deal. This is going to be really awkward, what I'm going to say next, but you've got BO.
Yeah.
Everybody gets caught short. So here's what we're going to do. Do you need to go buy a fresh shirt? Do you need to go home and shower? Do you need to get some deodorant? Maybe you need to try roll-on, because sometimes spray doesn't cut it, and I know exactly what story you're going to tell. I was present for that. I was there when that happened. Sorry. So that's the most awkward of conversations, because like, you couldn't get more personal than that.
Yeah.
But like, I found that people genuinely did respond like pretty well. Like, they were like,
you were offering solutions.
What did you say? Did you go, I've got BO too? Like, me too.
I would absolutely never, ever, ever.
No, Chris is too well turned out.
Absolutely
for that.
Not. I'm not in the same boat as you, Stinky. Yeah. No way. No way, right? I've showered, I've used roll, I smell like a dream 24/7, right? This is your problem. You smell like a foot. No, I'm not. I never said that. I never said that to anybody. But yeah, I mean, again, it's a more direct challenge, but then it's also like, I think as soon as somebody hears, like, what can we do? Then they kind of get past the like initial like shock of maybe being called out on something, isn't it? Because it's like, oh, I can see a future, I can see a path forward, rather than just that's it, then you're left to your own devices.
It's the language of we, isn't it, as well? Like, says there, you versus us versus them. It is like we versus you. Do you know what I mean? It makes a big difference. Saying like, what can we do to fix this problem? Equally, even if it's not your problem, the BO is that person's.
Yeah, you're taking it on together with them.
Yeah.
You're going on a roll-on journey.
Yeah, I know. Do you want me to roll it on for you? Shave your armpits.
But I really like that framework, because keen deeply challenging directly, because how many people either shirk a challenging conversation, or when they have it, it's just an all-out war.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be like that. Of course, there's going to be times where it gets heated, because some people just cannot take any form of feedback, but you kind of mitigate the chances of it becoming confrontational by showing that you care, be compassionate, bring solutions to the table, but don't beat around the bush with the message.
Totally.
Like, listening to her, she's so powerful and strong and direct, but she shows that she's like trying to go in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love definitely. That. Yeah, love it.
Okay, gents, that's a wrap for standing on the shoulders of giants, and I think there's a few different sources that people can delve into off the back of that. But if they want to continue this conversation with you two, where should they head towards, Chris?
@SavageScholarChris on Instagram. I always get nervous saying that because I got it wrong the first time I was on here. @SavageScholarChris on Instagram.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And David, where do you want to send them?
Instagram is @dhat_mtn or just @mtncoaching.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, gents. And thank you to the listener. I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.